It is a well-known trope that organizational cultures can become so embedded that over time its members can forget why a certain habit was formed, or for what purpose do certain rituals play. It gets very problematic when these habits or practices evolve to an extent that they ultimately deviate from or even counter their originally intended purposes. Worse, leaders may not recognize that this is occurring, or maybe they do but feel compelled to deny it. Should we not instead take steps to confront and alter such practices so they are aligned with their original purposes? But how can one identify when this cultural problem arises in the first place? My name is Tom Galvin, and these are my reflections on management. Okay, you'll notice that I named the episode Science Fair Syndrome. I'm going to get into why I called it that in a second, but what I want to do is I want to give the impetus, the inspiration behind the episode, which comes from an earlier episode from the Talking About Organizations main podcast, episode 57. And this is where we discussed Stephen Kerr's famous article, "The Folly of Rewarding A While Hoping for B." And it's at its heart, it's about incentives, incentivizing, you know, the reward system. This is where the reward system simply goes sideways, and it appears in so many different contexts, as he shows in the article. So the essence of it is that outcome B that we really, really hope, that we really, really want. But for whatever reason, we can't accomplish B directly, at least not through any incentives. So what we do is we incentivize what we can, which might very well be some other A, in the hopes that it will turn into, or that B would emerge as a result. Or B is in some way untouchable. B could not be accomplished through any sort of reward system. So A becomes like a proxy result. This is presented as kind of like a cultural issue, and it regards the, you know, in some way or alludes to the unspeakability of certain options or certain incentives, and that it, you know, it can become very, very frustrating for members. So now let's take a different tack on it, though, in that Kerr was talking about the reward system. Now, what I want to do is I want to talk about just the fundamental purpose behind an existing process or an existing system in which, you know, B was actually accomplished. The outcome, the desired outcome, was actually accomplished during the early goings. But over time, the desire to enhance B, to enhance the desired outcome, led to additional changes, evolution, natural evolution in the process or system in place. And in a way, we ended up with the system rewarding something different from the purpose as originally intended, to the point where the purpose for the activity is just completely, or is seen as completely divorced from the original purpose. To the point where people start to wonder, what are we really doing? Now, why did I call this science fair syndrome? Well, I want to tell you a little bit of a story. Because science fairs are familiar to American audiences, and perhaps they're familiar in other contexts as well. So a science fair is a school-related type of an activity, which is ostensibly to promote science. And this is basically where you have school children, generally from fourth grade, roughly age 10, all the way through completion of high school. What they do is they design and implement their own science projects, in that they follow a scientific method, which they have to come up with a hypothesis. They have to come up with an experiment. They have to conduct the experiment. They have to analyze the data, and they have to deliver some sort of result. And of course, obviously, fourth and fifth graders, these projects are generally very, very simple, rudimentary, designed to ensure understanding of the method. Whereas in high school, they can get very, very sophisticated. Just about any science topic is possible, whether it's social science, physical science, or otherwise. So as long as the scientific method is used. One would think that it's a wonderful way to promote science among our young people. No question that this has provides a tremendous opportunity. It's been ongoing for quite some time. It's kind of an annual event, and generally it's very, very well participated in. Basically, students are put their projects up on poster boards, and they post them in this huge gymnasium or a cafeteria or some other large room. Hundreds of these posters. You have ribbons, you have awards, you have all of this excitement associated with it. And they're judged. They are actually judged. And I've done this before. So you get volunteers who basically get a score sheet. They go from exhibit to exhibit, and they use the rubric, a very, very strict rubric, to say, you know, okay, you get so many points here, so many points there. And at least in where I'm from, the number of points out of 50 that you earn determines what level of award you get. If you get up above a certain level, it's a blue ribbon, first place, quote unquote, first place. If it's somewhat lower, you might get a red ribbon, second place. Then there's third place, and then honorable mention, which is generally for those that didn't really do so well. I mean, it's basically not a very, very high score. And then if it scored extremely low, then you get what's called a participant ribbon. It's kind of like a last place award. Now, let me tell you about something I witnessed at a science fair, which just sort of raised my eyebrows. So this was in an elementary school science fair, or the elementary school division of one science fair. And a student who I am sure had considerable parental help in this, but I don't know that. What they did was is the student put together a display which was supposed to show a green environment or various projects that could help with. They could say, you know, this is what a fully net zero type, wholly sustainable city block or a farm, a rural neighborhood. This is what it might look like. What kind of things it might contain. And it was basically just a model. Now, here's the challenge. Of course, if one was judging with the rubric, this would be the sort of thing that would not be considered a viable experiment. Did not follow the scientific method because there was no hypothesis that was being tested. There was no experiment. This was basically a demonstration. And demonstrations are not considered to be appropriate. I'm looking at this thing, and it was an extremely well-done demonstration. Really, really gorgeous. Very neatly done. Certainly very neatly done for compared to most of the other elementary school projects. Very impressive in terms of that there was at least some internet research done to show that, you know, here's a couple of technologies that one could put into it. And I think that a lot of the similar technologies were suggested in some of the websites you can look up for possible experiments to do. It was all very compelling, and it was so impressive that, you know, I'm watching people go by, and this is one where everybody is really looking at it. You know, this is very impressive. It looks very nice. I really like what this is telling us. It's fantastic. Well, of course, because it didn't follow the rubric, because it was technically just a demonstration, it only earned a participant ribbon. So the one exhibit that was actually generating the most unique, you know, was basically unique, was impressive, was gathering the most number of people stopping and looking at it, was a last place ribbon. I think, I do not know this for a fact, but I think I witnessed the child and the child's parent, who struck me as they probably were the ones who made It was probably their project, because the reaction on their faces and the way that they responded was, it was very unsettling to me. It was obvious that they had worked very, very hard, and yet it felt, you could feel the anguish that they were feeling and the disappointment. What also struck me was that I do not believe that this was a particularly well-off family. I mean, this was a family, I think, really put a lot of thought and resources in that they might not ordinarily have to try to support their child in the conduct of this exhibit. As I said in the beginning, you know, we have this activity whose purpose is ostensibly to promote science. And here we have somebody who actually, I think, went beyond, above and beyond a child, got the message, who we should be looking at and saying, this is brilliant stuff. I'd like you to go do this. I hope that you would be the sort of, you know, forward-thinking young mind that would go out there and actually make this happen to help with sustainability, to help with all of this sort of thing. But no. Because it's all about the rubric. It's all about the scoring. There's no intangible category to say that, you know, that something is really impressive. He walks away with a last place ribbon. This got me to thinking. And it turns out that I'm far from alone. There are actually blogs, bloggers out there who have come to a similar conclusion that I have. That if we really do want to promote science, then maybe we better take a serious step back and take a look at the process and say, well, are we actually promoting what we think we're promoting? Or has the process, the procedures, the way we're going about it deviated from that purpose? The blogs that I mentioned here that I found, a lot of them also complain about the fact that these science fairs really, you know, participation in the science fair, especially in places where it's mandatory, because it is mandatory in some places, it is an incredible investment of time and energy and frustration. And of course, you can imagine not all kids are that interested in science, or at least they're not prepared to participate in any sort of an experiment of this kind. And so for those parents of those types of kids, this moves from being a wonderful opportunity to one heck of an ordeal there. I'll have some links up on the website to show just how some parents have turned this into somewhat of a joke. So what we got to do, though, you know, in all seriousness, is we got to go back to thinking about what are we espousing and what are we actually doing. What is it that we're saying? You know, where have we steered ourselves? Are we really getting the most out of the event? Are we really generating interest in science? I can point to a couple of websites where blogging parents have basically been saying that we need to move away, for example, from the pure science fair and go to a different kind of an event, in which we bring in people from colleges or people from the field, or maybe even some local technology centers, those who can bring in and have some sort of like a demonstration to accompany the science fair, and to let the children sort of be engaged. Because the other thing that I didn't mention before was the fact that the judging happens without the student. You know, there's actually very little in terms of interaction between all of these students and the world of science. You know, you basically put your poster up and you display it, and that's about it. If there was a different approach where you bring in all of these other people and you make it a little bit more interactive, then maybe that would serve the purpose a little bit more. Get students interested, get them excited about science. I do recognize that, you know, that would take a considerable amount of effort, and maybe not all places would be able to do that. But it certainly gets around the current issue, which is that you have a practice that has potentially deviated from its purpose. More broadly, I've definitely found this same kind of a behavior in a number of rituals. And I think, if you think about it, you probably can think of some rituals in your organizations that are kind of the same way, that, they've become formalized to the point where the formality overtakes the original purpose, or the original purpose has just sort of like gotten forgotten over time. We feel pretty good about what it is that we're doing, but we're not questioning it. But we need to question it, perhaps. And especially nowadays, where so many of our common rituals are disrupted because we've moved to remote operations, we're doing things differently because of the pandemic and all that stuff. This is actually, I think, a golden opportunity to take a critical look at a lot of these rituals that we've clung on to very tightly because they seem to have worked, or they seem to have been good enough. And now we got to put ourselves in the shoes of those who perhaps we may be unknowingly pushing out, like that child who did that wonderful demonstration, and think about, what are we really doing? Are we doing what we think we're doing? Are we accomplishing what we think we're accomplishing? Can we step back and take a critical look at it and try something else, or rethink something else, and get back to the purpose, the underlying purpose of what we were trying to do in the first place? And that's all for now. The views expressed are my own and do not necessarily reflect those of the United States Army War College, the United States Army, or the Department of Defense. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.